You could spend the weekend doing the same old whatever, or you could conquer the weekend in the all-new Hyundai Santa Fe. Visit HyundaiUSA.com for more details. Hyundai, there's joy in every journey.
Diamondbacks baseball.
And he corks one way back, and it is gone!
The D-backs BP show.
Fly ball to left. Hit pretty well by Lamb at the wall. It's gone!
Diamondbacks Radio Network.
There's a shot to center field. Parr on the run. Can't get it. He gets by him. All the way to the wall. Bounces more towards center. Marte turns second. He heads for third. Tony Parachica is racing into the plate. Here comes the throw. It's high. He is safe.
D-backs BP show.
Our weekly chat rolls on tonight. Technical director this evening is Luke Robbins with the television voice of the Arizona Diamondbacks, Steve Berthiaume. I'm Mike Farron. Andy Martino from SNY in New York is going to join us in a little bit to update us on the latest in the negotiations to get baseball back on the field. Bert, I feel very confident in saying that we are going to see baseball in 2020. I don't know how many games it's going to be yet. I don't think any of us know that. Andy will be able to give us some insight because he's been following these negotiations very closely, but I think based on the fact that we've seen proposals change hands in the last 2 days, we're getting closer to where the two sides can agree on a number as opposed to having a total implemented by the commissioner's office.
Yeah, Mike, there was a players' union proposal today. In fact, just it seems an hour or so ago, one day earlier than baseball had asked for. So the timeline is speeding up a little bit in terms of the exchange of proposals. But the latest one issued earlier today, 89 games, full prorated share, and expanded playoffs for 2 seasons. The players' latest proposal has the season starting on July 10th and ending on October 11th. It seems that both sides are completely entrenched in two areas. The players want their full prorated salary shares, and it seems like the owners do not want to play November baseball. Those seem to be absolutes. So if they can come to a middle ground somewhere in there and find that magic number of games and end on a date that seems to fit the owners' budgets and schedules and calendars, maybe they can get a deal done, hopefully sometime by the end of this week. But that's all speculation, of course, as all of this is.
Right. And we do have some good news, at least in terms of the fact that the Players Association responded before their deadline with a counteroffer that was supposed to be tomorrow. Andy Martino from SNY is on the line with us to help us break this down. Andy, Mike Farron, Steve Berthiaume. First and foremost, what's your reaction to the counterproposal from the Players Association this evening?
My reaction was, thank God I get to come on with Mike Farron and see if he's first you while I process this. I mean,
this whole process has been a joyful parade, hasn't it? This is the latest float to go by.
Full of joy. This might be the most joyless exercise in the history of baseball.
And think about that for a second, because you cover the Mets.
Yeah. Whoa!
That's right. Joylessness on a regular basis, believe me, in Queens. But this is a whole other ball of wax, obviously. Look, to me, there's sort of a familiar cycle emotionally, I think, that we go through, those of us who really want the game back, every time there's a new offer or a counterproposal. And I think it's fair to say that although neither of us is biased per one side or the other, we're all trying to play it down the middle and be objective and open-minded. I think we all have a bias toward more games because we like baseball and we want to get it going. It's our jobs to cover it. And so every time one of these things comes out, we get hopeful for a second. Oh, hey, maybe this could work. Or maybe this is close. And then, you know, people that are involved in it start to show pretty quickly that they're angry and they're apart and toxic and they're really just still having two different conversations about pay. So, I actually think that the offer from the union tonight could provide a roadmap toward an agreement. Frankly, my first blush of sourcing out of MLB is not necessarily agreeing with that.
But Andy, we're getting a smaller scale in terms of the games. We started at 82 to 114. Now we're somewhere between 89 and 76, if you look at the two proposals. Does that mean we've sort of narrowed the field in making progress, at least in one regard?
Well, they are making progress in that regard. And one thing I think is misunderstood, maybe fairly, because the owners have threatened a 48-game season, but I think it's misunderstood that they want that. The owners want more games than that. They understand that the optics of a season that short would be terrible. So there's a mutual desire to get the number of games up from that. The question is just, can they get over their deep, deep disagreement on this issue of the full prorated salaries? I mean, we all know the history. One side thinks that they agreed to 100% prorated salaries in March, and the other side doesn't. And when we read the agreement, I think it's fair to say that it's unclear, and you could interpret it either way. So what's been going on in the past couple of days, guys, as I've been talking to people, is number one, I've become convinced that the players aren't coming off that number, that they don't intend to. And that's been a surprise to me. All this time I thought it was a negotiating posture, but I actually think it's a stand on principle they're planning to make. And the second thing I've learned is that MLB owners are livid about this. They're like, what do you mean you're not going to negotiate? Because like I heard yesterday, well, they would come up to guaranteeing 75% of the salaries. And then the players in the union side, they were like, 75? No, 100. So if MLB wants to get to a place where there's a compromise number, like you get in a negotiation, the players just aren't willing to do that. And I think that there's just anger on both sides about this issue that's preventing it from moving forward yet.
We're visiting with Andy Martino from SNY. But I think with that, though, in that agreement in March, if that's the hard line that the players are going to take, then the owners have the right to take the hard line that they get a chance to set the schedule. Now, the question is, at what point does that reach a number that feels like as much of a baseball season as we can have versus what I think you've written about and what others have written about as a season somewhere in that 48 to 54 game range?
Yeah, that's tough. I mean, it's all subjective at this point, right? I mean, we're talking about less than half of a normal season, no matter what we do. So what do we consider to be enough? Is 50, 60, 70, 80? I guess it's sort of in the eye of the beholder. But there is something about, I think, something in the 40s that feels like, really, we're going to do that? And I think all sides recognize that. But, you know, where do they get? I don't know. What feels legitimate? I don't know. They're still trying to figure out. The owners have to, I guess, figure out what they can afford or what they're comfortable paying for, how many games, and get to that point. And the exact number, guys, I just don't know what feels right. To me, just on a gut level, it feels like we need to get over 70, but I don't really know what my rationale is behind that. I mean, what do you guys think?
I would say if you could at least, I always go back to 1981 when they played 110. That ship has clearly sailed right now.
Yeah.
I think, Andy, it's almost more important what the fans think. I mean, no matter how many games you play, whether it's 40 or 80, you need the fans to care about what's happening on the field. And I think we keep losing more and more fans every day this goes by, don't you?
I don't know. I truly don't know. I think that we do become prisoners of the moment sometimes with any news story where it feels really important right now. And the only thing that, and I throw myself into this, the only thing that we can really see is the anger and the rancor. But if they come to an agreement or if they start a season, then we'll be talking about baseball and watching baseball and about baseball. And I wonder how much of this lingers. I really do. I know there's a lot of fans out there saying they're losing me, they're pissing me off. I won't watch. I don't know how much of that is emotion now and discussed now that will continue and carry over. I just don't know. This is unprecedented stuff. I do know that carrying on a labor war during a pandemic that's cost 100,000 plus American lives, followed by the worst racial unrest we've seen in a generation, is a terrible look, and people are rightfully disgusted by it. But the people who like baseball, I don't know. Are they really going to tune out? I just don't know.
Yeah, I think you're absolutely right. The fact that the situation we're in health-wise in this country and culturally, socially, everything is underscoring the discouragement and the disappointment in what's happening now with baseball. Let me ask you one more question about the players seem to be showing some flexibility or some give in terms of the postseason. You can keep more of the profits if there's a postseason, risk less if there's not. How much of the concern about not playing November baseball, which the owners have indicated they're adamant about, is COVID-19 related, or how much of it may be related to the fact that the TV networks might not want to have baseball on in November when they're trying to show college football and NFL?
Well, it depends how cynical one wants to be about what MLB is saying, right? Talk about in the eye of the beholder. I mean, look, I definitely believe Major League Baseball when they say that their health advisors that they retained warn them of the possibility of a second wave of this pandemic coming around that time. And that's a fact. But it's certainly also a fact that moving around postseason games for TV and for the TV partners is problematic. So I'm sure it's a blend of those things.
Andy, before we let you go, there were a couple of other interesting nuggets in this from the Players Association. Bert hit on some of this in that they're willing to agree potentially to an expanded postseason, which he and I are going to get into a little bit further later on. There was another component in it in that they asked to contribute with Major League Baseball upwards of $5 million combined to both help to pay minor leaguers who are unlikely to have a season, it seems like, and also for it seemed a fairly vague title in terms of some social justice initiatives. I'm curious what your take on is that, and I know it's been a short time since it came out.
Yeah.
If there was any information you had further on those.
That's the information I have on that, Mike, but I don't know how specific beyond that. I doubt it got specific beyond that at this point. And I think when you're in negotiation, you're also obviously a big part of this is negotiating for public perception and for the sympathy of the majority of baseball fans. And so now that the union is, I'm sure there are many people. In fact, I know there are many people in the union that are concerned with issues of social justice and compensating minor leaguers who are out of work. But also, you know, tactically, now you've put it in MLB's hands to say, are you really going to say no to social justice? So I think there's some brinksmanship going on there, too, frankly. Maybe I'm too cynical from covering this for 6 weeks, but feels like a little bit of PR, but that's part of the deal here. That's part of a negotiation, right?
Andy, why would any of this lead to cynicism from anybody? There was one other note that's at least worth discussing, and that's that the Players Association had conceded to owners that players not at high risk for coronavirus could opt out this season but would receive neither service time nor salary. Bill Shaken from the Los Angeles Times just had that. And that does seem to be at least some level of a concession. They have made progress, it seems like, on everything outside of how many games we're going to have and how much people are going to be paid.
Yes, it's a good point, Mike, because there's been concessions, on meaningful concessions on both sides this week. MLB removing draft pick compensation for free agents is a big concession. It'll be the first time, I think, since the 70s that there hasn't been any compensation attached. So that was a concession. What you just mentioned is a concession. Just the expanded postseason, players mic'd up during regular season games. That's not a concession per se, but it's a big deal. It's a change. It accelerates something that a lot of people have felt has been good for the game. In 2 years of dramatically expanded postseason, there's a lot here, in my opinion, there's a lot here that the owners could really like and really benefit from, both financially and just see how it improves the product. And if they could swallow their anger about this prorated issue and go to the players and say, they went to the players in 5 minutes from now and said, okay, here's the amount of games. I'm just going to throw out a number, 75, say. 70, 75, full prorated salaries and all this expanded postseason stuff. There'd be a deal instantly. So it's really just this proration issue that's become so much bigger than it needs to be. The actual dollars are not that big of a deal at this point. It's actually just
it's the hill that they're going to die on, at least right now. That's the principle, and they're not willing to go over that line because they've got another big CBA negotiation coming up in December of 21.
Yep. I mean, this has a lot to do, I think, with Tony Clark making sure to demonstrate to his members that when he says something, he means it, and he can stand up to the owners leading into the CBA, as you mentioned. So there's that context. And the owners, I think, truly shell-shocked. I've really sensed this over the past couple of days, guys. Like, they mean it. They're really not going to come off 100. And just that whole emotional component to this that goes beyond maybe what's rational or financial. You know, smart people on this, on the player's side, a lot of them have always said, it's not about the prorated salaries principle. It's about the number of dollars. It's about splitting up the number of dollars any way you can slice it. but I think lately it's actually become about this principle. So that makes it harder to strike a deal for sure. But as I keep reminding people, and as I know you guys understand, the season is not at stake in any of this. The season is happening. It really just is a matter of how it's going to feel and how many games they're going to play.
Yeah, it'd be great if they worked all through it and we got it done by the time the draft is over. That would be incredible. So,
wouldn't that be a nice look?
Boy.
But you know what? July 4th would have been a nice look, too, and they couldn't get their act together on that, could they?
It seems it's a little wishful thinking to have it done by Thursday, I think.
But you know what? Movement in the way I just described, truly just movement from the owners on that one issue has to happen, and then a deal, like, boom, it's right there. Will that happen? We don't know. There's a lot of owners out there who feel pretty upset, I'm sure, by this stance. So I don't know. And the thing that people think, I think there's a thought maybe among the public in some cases that Rob Manfred's just in charge of this and making these decisions. But we know, just like Tony's got to sell a deal to his players, Manfred's got to sell to his owners. So it's kind of tough for him to go back to his owners and say they haven't given it all on the pay issue. And I think that's part of the problem here.
Especially when owners have all sort of different requirements financially, some are in different circumstances than others.
That's a great point. And that's a tough constituency to herd, too, because they have issues with revenue sharing resentments and all kinds of things. That depending on market size, you're absolutely right, Steve, that they want depending on their own circumstances. So it's pretty complicated to run either of those organizations. Not that they're doing a particularly good job right now, but I guess at least we can acknowledge that they're difficult jobs, pleasing their constituencies.
Yeah, you get paid the big bucks for a reason. Andy, we appreciate the time. Thank you so much. We will talk again soon, my friend. Thanks.
Thanks for having me, guys.
Yep, Andy Martino from SNY. A little insight into the latest in the MLB and Players Association negotiations. We'll visit with D-backs scouting director Derek Ladnier next. It's the D-backs BP Show.
Diamondbacks baseball. This is the Diamondbacks BP Show. Diamondbacks Radio Network.
There's a major baseball event that starts tomorrow. It is the first-year player draft. The D-backs will pick twice tomorrow, the 18th and the 33rd overall pick. The event will be televised on both ESPN and MLB Network. Sadly, though, Bert, our next guest will not be the face of the draft for the Diamondbacks, even though he is way more beautiful than Mike Hazen is. Derek Ladnier, the D-backs scouting director, is on the line with us. Derek, Mike Farron, and Steve Berthiaume. I'm disappointed. We're not going to get to see your face on TV tomorrow.
I don't know if Hayes is going to like that, but that's okay.
Derek, he will figure out a way to avoid the cameras which are being set up in his house and drag you into the living room. I guarantee it. If he can avoid that, he will do whatever he has to do.
I completely understand what you're saying. So
obviously this is a unique situation, and folks got an idea. And before we get into the draft itself, I just want to kind of go through some of the background on this. Folks got a little bit of a taste of it with the NFL and their draft, but you guys are having meetings and all in the same room together. So what has the draft preparation been like? Give us some of the nuts and bolts on how this sausage was made, Derek.
All right. You know, we all got shut down around March 11th, you know, obviously no longer evaluating players, and the protocol, the way we do business changed rapidly. So it was left up to us to make some adjustments. And so what we started doing was basically taking all of the information that we had gathered over the course of the past year, the summer, and even into the spring, we were able to see quite a few players because our guys, you know, they were aggressively out doing their jobs. And when we got shut down, we said, okay, how are we going to do this? So we started basically nuts and bolts. Let's start having some Zoom calls. Let's start having some Microsoft Team calls. And it basically steamrolled into where it was conference calls every day. And when I tell you it was an organizational feat, it was, because everyone was involved. I mean, not only the scouting department, but we've included player development. Obviously, all of our analytic department is involved with it. You know, Hayes, JP, Amiel. We've had Zoom calls with players. I mean, it's just been a different way to accomplish the same task with less information than we normally do in a scouting year. You know, like during the regular year, you know, we have our area scouts come in. Then we have our regional guys come in, and then we all get together as a group and have meetings prior to the draft. And, you know, we had all of our meetings through Zoom or Microsoft team with our area scouts, all the information they were able to accumulate. Daily, we've had meetings with the cross checkers, you know, talking about the players, basically lining up the board, no different than we've ever done in the past, but the process started earlier because we no longer have any information to add to the process through evaluation. And it's been different. I've learned a lot, quite frankly, that there are ways that we can improve in the future once we do start watching players, because I do think some of the meetings that we have been very valuable to the process. Things that we learn from, you know, the unfortunate situation, I think is going to make us better as an organization in the future.
It was interesting to read Zach Buchanan's piece in The Athletic, I think it was yesterday, and Amiel was quoted in there a lot, and he said, you know, when we have face-to-face meetings with some of these draft candidates and there's five guys in a boardroom all wearing Diamondbacks clothes, the prospect, the player, is a little more guarded. But he has found that in these Zoom calls, they're wearing shorts, they're in a T-shirt, it's much more casual. And in that sense, he's gotten a sort of a better feel for the player than he would have maybe under normal circumstances. Have you found that to be the case?
Absolutely. Because, I mean, like, we get on these Zoom calls and I have my hoodie on and my shorts and, and we're talking. I mean, it is like we're just like getting together, you know, to eat some lunch or something like that. And it's not as formal, I guess you could say, because, you know, when you're surrounded by a bunch of guys that are front office people with all of their Diamondbacks gear on and we're like basically – you know, drilling this young man about everything that he's done. And honestly, I think these kids are more comfortable talking just because that's the way they communicate. I have lots of kids in my family, and that's the way they've grown up communicating, and it's never been the really one-on-one personal aspect of it. I completely agree with the fact that as we talk during the discussion, people seem to loosen up and become more real in who they are and are more, you know, and more apt to just kind of tell you who they are as a person without, you know, without being guarded. And I completely agree. And that's one of the things that I was alluding to when I was talking about, you know, how things that as we move forward as an organization, there's tremendous value in this because it gives us an opportunity, you know, and actually even economically, you know, like, you know, we can just hop on a Zoom call or Microsoft Teams and have a conversation with anybody in the world, quite frankly. And I think we're able to walk out of that meeting probably with more information than we were able to gather in a more personal setting just because of the comfort level. I completely agree with Amiel on that.
We're visiting with Derek Ladnier, the D-back scouting director. You talked a little bit about how much video you guys are working off of. What are some of the advantages and then the disadvantages to having basically a video-based draft? I realize watching defense is a lot harder to start with, but outside of that, what were some of the things that maybe you've learned from that and some of the things that you're like, man, I really wish this did this better?
Well, I'm going to go out and say that, you know, we've always utilized video to a certain degree. It supplemented basically the game evaluation. And, you know, during the course of the game, you have the opportunity to, I mean, like you said, like a position player, you get to watch them, how they move around on a consistent basis, how they react to pitches, you know, where they are at a certain place on the field, you know, when they're supposed to be there, or are they out of position? Are they engaging in every pitch, or do they take pitches off? Those are the things that we don't necessarily have. But I will say that, you know, a lot of this information has been accumulated, not just from the limited time that we had with them in the spring, but we watched all of these players during the course of the summer and also last spring that we knew were going to be targeted guys for this year's draft, you know, the Cape Cod leagues and all of the showcases and everything. So we've got plenty of information. The issue probably more are with the high school players, mm-hmm. to where you guys both know that high school at that age, they change, you know, and sometimes they change rapidly. You know, you didn't hear about a guy last spring and all of a sudden he's throwing 96, 97 miles an hour. That happens a lot, you know, and a lot of these guys that did not get a chance to play, I think they're going to be a little bit penalized because of that. Sure. I'm not saying that it's going to change their draft status, but just the fact that we didn't get to go watch them play to see the improvements that they made from one year to the other, because it's certainly far more dramatic at the high school level than it is at the college level. So those are some of the unique challenges that we're faced with. I mean, obviously the top tier talent is a top tier talent, and we know it is, and we've seen it, and we've scouted them extensively. It's maybe some of that second tier of talent that you didn't, you know, that we liked, but we just wanted to come back and see them this spring to see if their bodies had changed, their actions had changed, you know, their stuff had changed, or their strength had changed with their power, or, you know, the ability to swing the bat speed, all those different things, especially at the high school level. That's a part that's kind of unique for me, because you just don't, it's an incomplete process, and we're just trying to fill in the blanks with all of the information, all of the data, all of the video that we were able to accumulate, because, you know, since, you know, I think March 27th, we haven't been able to watch any of these kids, and obviously the country was in a shutdown, and everybody was staying at home, which they should have been staying home. But as we've slowly opened it up, we just still haven't had access to these players other than through Zoom calls. And, you know, and you know, people say, you know, I've been doing bullpens and I'm throwing harder now. You just don't know. That's the incomplete process.
Well, everything is different this year for you, Derek. I mean, usually this is 40 rounds. Now it's 5. Last year, 7 picks on the first day. This year, 2. You've got 18 and 33. So let's sort of get D-back specific here if we can. Last year, they had the 7 picks, loaded the farm system with new talent, a big influx that everybody's excited about. How does that haul from last year impact this year when you have fewer picks and a much more limited selection in terms of rounds?
I can say that I'm very glad that we were able to have last year's draft before this happened. I can tell you that right now. Otherwise, otherwise you would be talking to a scouting director that was about to lose his mind. So that does help. You know, at the end of the day, we still have 5 selections. And as you guys know, that any selection we make, it's with the idea and thought process that it can help build our farm system and ultimately help our major league team in the future. So, you know, we just have to be right. That's the big thing. It's like you have 5 selections, and I did an interview earlier today, and it's like we've dissected these guys probably more than we ever have in our life, because there's the margin of error is very slim, because we don't have any picks. I mean, obviously after the 5th round, there's the opportunity to sign guys, you know, for the 20K, and we don't know who's going to sign. We don't know who's going to go back to school. We'll target guys. Obviously, we'll go through due process to make sure that we're on the right guys. But at the end of the day, you know, we may love a guy and want to sign him, and he doesn't feel like he's being compensated at his level of ability. And he may say no, because all of the players have gained another year of eligibility, and they may go back to school. It's just kind of the unknown. I mean, I really don't know what's going to happen. I mean, like, every team's going to be trying to sign these players, and ultimately if they sign or if they don't sign, you know, we're going to do everything in our power to try to target these guys. But just the depth of, you know, where we are with 5 selections after that, it's kind of the unknown. We just don't really know what's going to happen after the 5th round.
Hey, Derek, before we let you go, just for people who might be curious, how do you characterize this draft overall? Because obviously it doesn't get the same attention that the NFL or the NBA does, just based on the nature of players aren't going to be in the big leagues right away. So how would you characterize the talent, the way this draft shakes out?
I would say, and I think I'm accurate in saying this, that the college pitching crop is probably deeper than I've seen in the past. I mean, it's a good group of guys, and I think there's significant depth in the draft with the college pitching. You know, obviously the elite high school talent's going to get drafted and be compensated accordingly. You know, after that, it's a pitching deep draft. That's the reality of it. It is what it is. And, you know, and obviously we've evaluated all of these guys. You know, you're going to see, I mean, like every draft, you know, anybody that we feel like is a good hitter, most of those guys, as you guys have witnessed in just about every draft, all of the college hitters, for sure, they get pushed up the board because they just fly off the board rapidly. And I've always said that, you know, it's like you have to get those guys up there if you want them. And, you know, it's just, I just think the pitching aspect of it is really deep this year.
Well, Derek, we greatly appreciate the time. We'll let you get back to work. I'm sure that there's probably 6 or 7 more Zoom calls that you have to go through before you get a chance to go to bed tonight. Personally, I am hoping that Spencer Torkelson slides to 18 and it makes it an easy pick for you guys. Yeah. But I don't think that's going to happen tomorrow. But we certainly appreciate it, and best of luck tomorrow.
Thanks so much, guys. I appreciate it. I appreciate you guys reaching out.
All right. Thanks, Derek. Derek Ladnier. I love Derek. He's great. Scouting director for the Diamondbacks joining us. Spencer Torkelson is not going to slide to 18. I'm going to
go. Well, you never know. If there's that many good pitchers out there, maybe he does. I'm just kidding.
The Tigers plan to tank for Tork looks like it's going to pay off tomorrow. I'm going to go out.
Is that what they were doing the whole time?
I don't think that was necessarily.
I thought it was just because they didn't have any good players.
And then we'll find out whether or not the Orioles were lousy for Lacy. It's a Lacy from Texas.
Are these the little hashtags you keep spitting out on your other satellite show?
You don't want to hear what I came up with for Austin Martin. We'll talk a little bit about the concept of an expanded playoff next. This is the D-backs BP Show.
Diamondbacks Baseball. D-backs BP Show. Diamondbacks Radio Network.
These are the times that I really value, Bert. The times that you and I can just be together to talk some good old-fashioned hardball.
It's like those wonderful hours once you've done all your prep work but the game hasn't quite started yet, where I wander into the radio booth to check in with you, Leo, the Gub, Candy, and really, really find out what's going on the radio side, which is where all the cool things happen.
Isn't it generally just Candiotti making fun of everybody in the room? That seems to be
That's why I like to go in and watch.
Yeah, I can understand that. I can see why that would be a popular choice for you. So one of the things that has been discussed in these last two proposals from MLB and from the Players Association, if you missed the news today, MLB had made a proposal yesterday on games played and salary that the players did not accept, but they countered with one today. But in both of those were the idea of having an expanded postseason for this season. The players suggested one for this year and next that would include upwards of 8 teams. D-backs manager Torey Lovello was a guest today on the Burns and Gambo program this afternoon on 98.7 FM, Arizona Sports Station. Here's his take on an expanded postseason.
Of course I would. I would welcome that. I know that the based on the criteria that they're following this year, that we would have been a playoff team last year. We were just nosed out at the very end, and those times hurt. But I think we've learned and grown, and it'll prepare us for a little bit of a battle here that we're getting ready to face this year. And of course, I feel like the better chance you have of getting in the big dance, whether you're a wild card or whether you're a division winner, it is the same level playing field that everybody's going up against. We're all riding the same ride. And if we can get out in front of that ride a little bit quicker than the others and do something special, get into the big dance is the name of the game, and that's all I really care about.
If this were in place last year, Steve, the 8 postseason teams in the National League all would have had winning records. The Cubs would have been the 8th seed in such a scenario with 84 wins. In the American League, it's a little more complicated in that the Texas Rangers would have been the 8th seed under 500 at 78 and 84, but the other 7 would have had winning records as well. You do run the risk of that with an expanded postseason of maybe a team or two getting in sub 500 most likely, but it certainly would add another element of flair to October if you had a short series, and it's been some speculation about a 3-game set would happen between, like, say, the 1 and the 8 seed, and it's far more likely to see an upset in that kind of 3-game set than you would even in a 5- or 7-game series.
Well, I know, Mike, much like Jennifer Aniston in the movie Office Space, all about your pieces of flair. sorry. 16 teams in the postseason, 8 in each league was what the Players Union proposed.
I'm going to beat up your fax machine now.
Today.
I become less and less of an old school hardline traditionalist every year that we do this. Like, things that I was dead set against a few years ago, I now think might actually work better.
Flexibility is one of your hallmarks.
Isn't it, though? I'm known for that. But, you know, getting rid of the 19-inning games, coming up with some kind of a system to end games after 12 innings, and the idea, you know, when I first saw a pitch clock in an Arizona Fall League game, I was horrified, and then by the third inning, I forgot it was even there. All kinds of things like that you very quickly can change your opinion on. And I know right now that's the most important thing as a culture we can do, listen to facts and decide it's okay to change your opinion on so many things. Baseball certainly not any different. So usually I have developed more and more flexibility. On this, I'm still going to go old school. I don't want the regular season to become the NBA or the NHL. That is my number one fear, as I'm sure it is with a lot of fans. Every single game, all 162, assuming you're playing a normal season, has to mean something. And I like the playoffs the way they are now. I think they got it just right. I love the idea of the one-game play-in game, the wild card game, whatever you want to call it. You have to think or change your mind or your idea of what a postseason team is. I don't think it's unfair to play a one-game playoff to get into the division series. I like it the way it is. I don't want to see that 162 watered down.
So I tend to agree with you, although, I mean, I would go a step further. As much as I enjoy the actual wild card game, I don't know that I necessarily love the format of it, because you're boiling a 162-game season down to a winner-take-all game when you're not necessarily having a tiebreaker. And so I don't necessarily love that idea. But I understand why this concept exists and why it's being considered for these next 2 years. And a good portion of it has to do with television revenue, and that's right. Where a big chunk of the money comes from is the television networks want playoff games. And so that's where it makes – listen, it's a lot different now than it was in the 50s. When the Yankees were winning World Series in the 50s every single year, they only had to beat they had to win their league, and then they had to beat, Brooklyn or the Giants every year in the World Series, and that was it, right? You had one postseason team. And as you've seen it expand, the path to get there is much more difficult. I think it makes what – largely what like the San Francisco Giants did in the last decade, very, very impressive in that they won 3 World Series championships because they, in one instance, had to go through a wild card game to do it, but also had to win all of these multiple rounds. I think it creates a separate entity in the tournament versus the regular season. And I think that, to me, I tend to separate the two as it is. But I certainly understand that, and I do in this instance where we're going to have a season that is going to be significantly shorter, I like the idea of it being a sprint to get to that, but also yes, opening it up to more teams. And I think that that's what's so unique about this year, is that regardless of what we say and how weird it would feel to have, say, you know, a 60 or 70 game season, the intensity level that's going to be created by having to win every night is going to be unlike anything that we've felt over the course of a full year.
It's going to be a regular season full of postseason games is what it's going to come down to, because they're all, as you just said, they're all going to be critical. Now, if the owners do not want to play November baseball, I don't see how you can possibly have an expanded playoff anyway. But I think you hit the nail right on the head. This is really, I think, about money. They have to figure out a way to recoup some of this money. Which I think is why the players are proposing 2 years of expanded playoffs as opposed to just one, because so many people are concerned about baseball's finances next year. What's 2021 going to look like when teams are still hurting financially, when you might not have full ballparks, you might not have sellout crowds? This is another opportunity to make up some of that revenue to get it back. If 2021 proves tough financially, which in all likelihood it will, I think that's sort of a negotiating tool right now that both sides can talk about and try and recover some of this lost money. But down the road, long term, if you're going to change the model, I think that's a whole nother discussion than in this particular case, which involves obviously this year and next year as well.
Well, and that gets us into a much deeper discussion as to what the baseball will look like come 2022, because the next collective bargaining agreement, there is probably going to be a significant battle over the way contracts and money is distributed to players from both the owner sides and from the player side. I mean, I think that there's going to be, you're going to see some significant changes in that, but I think you're also going to see some fundamental structural changes to the game. We're starting to see that. It's likely going to happen in the way the minor league system works. You're going to see it in the draft. Next year's draft will be 20 rounds, and I think that that's what it's going to be going forward, is probably around 20 rounds instead of 40. So I think you're going to see a number of structural changes to baseball, and baseball 2022 is going to look a lot different than what we would have anticipated baseball 2020 looking like back in March, or even what baseball 2021 is going to look like.
And I think that's okay. I think we need to modernize the structure of the game in a number of different areas. And I think, you know, we all have that little traditionalist side to where we don't want to change anything. We sort of get panicky when you consider a drastic change or what it might be considered a drastic change. But the more you look at it, I think the game does need to evolve. There are ways you can make it more exciting. There are ways you can make it more fan-friendly. And I don't think anything should be out of bounds in terms of a discussion along those lines. Anywhere you can get to the point where it makes the game more interesting for the consumer, that's something that you need to talk about.
Yeah, and creative ideas, too, I think, both in terms of the structure of the way the game is built and then how you, as you said, make it more accessible to fans, I think, going forward. But a shortened season with an expanded postseason, I can get on board with for this year. I think that that has a chance to be really exciting. I look at the count as being half full all the time as opposed to...
Yes, you're known for that. That's
half empty. Some of us are always behind in the count, 0-2. We will wrap up this edition of the D-backs BP show next.
Diamondbacks baseball. Diamondbacks baseball. The D-backs BP show. Diamondbacks Radio Network.
Final moments of our program this evening. Say, Bert, coming up
on
Thursday. Thursday on Fox Sports Arizona. Perhaps you've
heard
of that.
That's on the TV side, by the way.
Thank you very much.
Yeah, Game 5 of the World Series, 6:30 on Fox Sports Arizona.
The 2001 World Series. I think we should clarify which one.
Is that the one we won?
People were confused.
Yeah. That's right. We're going to show last year's. Yeah, so that's coming up Thursday, Fox Sports Arizona, 6:30. Don't forget the team shop is still open virtually. It's physically closed. You can't go in there and buy anything, but you can order D-back stuff. Remember, all new uniforms that we've yet to actually see. Hopefully we'll be seeing them soon.
They're in MLB The Show. I don't know what you're talking about. I think they look great in that.
Let me tell you, even I am getting tired of MLB The Show at this point. It's been 3 solid months of MLB The Show on the PS4, and I think I'm burned out.
I think there are some pretty good little nuggets. I got that. Well, you saw my hat that I got, right? That was from Fanatics and stuff. It was in the team store. The with the red cactus on it. That's a good one. You saw that hat.
In your little office there?
Yeah. I
you do have the TV, but right behind your desk where you do occasionally play MLB The Show. I know that.
No. I was talking about the hat that I bought at the team shop from the team shop.
Oh. Yes,
I'm sorry. Did I confuse you by talking about the team shop?
Well, because you got me off track. I'm trying to get the business done.
Just trying to keep you rolling here, Bert.
Team shop at dbacks.com or call 602-462-6701, and you can figure out a way to get some stuff sent to you. So that's pretty cool.
That would be actual stuff and not virtual stuff, correct?
Yeah, the actual stuff, no virtual engagement. But you do need virtual engagement to get the actual stuff. So that's the great irony of all of this.
Now, if you use a credit card, is that virtual money or actual money that gets spent on it?
Only if I'm using your card, then it's virtual money. Anyone else's card, it would be actual money.
Actual money, yes, that's true.
And you have all your funds tied up in dog toys now that Rocky has arrived. But
you know my nickname is Overdraft Protection, right? So that's
some of our listeners might not know that you got a new dog.
We did, yeah, from the Arizona Animal Welfare League, as a matter
of fact.
Way
to go, by the way. That's great job by you and Erica. Thank you. Everybody should be doing that.
Thank you. We rescued a 3-year-old golden retriever at AAWL. Is a great organization, and they have lots of dogs available, and they're still by appointment only on the weekends, but you should get signed up and get down there and meet a lot of great dogs and cats that are at AAWL. Really great organization, and the building is really cool. It's at like 40th, I think, just south of Van Buren. Really great facility that they have there.
Yeah, that's been one thing, assuming everyone is still at home and not at the office, that this is a great time to adopt or rescue a pet. Because you're home and you give the animal more opportunity to get acclimated to its new surroundings, so we'd encourage everybody to do that.
Are you getting a second dog then as a result of
There's
that?
Been some, actually, there has been some discussion. You and Erica really? Have motivated us. I mean, Jon Snow might need a buddy to keep him, but he's kind of a handful as it is, so we're not sure.
He's such a nice dog. What do you mean a
he's
handful?
He's the world's greatest dog.
They're all but the world's greatest dogs.
He likes to be entertained.
So the apple doesn't fall very far from the tree then.
You know, he has a habit that I think he picked up from my wife, Cindy, of walking into the room right at a key moment in MLB The Show when it's second, third, two outs.
And insisting and I'm on being a, pet, yes.
Yeah, yeah, an eighth inning situation in a one-run game, and all of a sudden the dog is standing in front of the television. So that has happened on more than one occasion.
My dogs tend to do, they have the strong nose, you know, where they want to be pet. And so they will tend to do that with, you know, 2-0 count, bases loaded, big pitch, right? And they'll hit your hand on the controller just as it's coming so that you pop it up on the infield.
Why would you swing at that pitch, Mike?
Well, it's because the dog made me do it, Steve.
That's why both of our records are what they are.
both virtually and in real life. You know, I feel like at the end of the last, how many of these have we done? 62 shows over the course of the last 70.
That's
sorry,
right.
70 shows. We have said it's a big week for Major League Baseball. I'm not going to say it this week because I'm going to hope that by not saying it, it's going to end up leading us to at least a plan to play. We're going to play. We just don't know when yet.
The owners asked for a response to their latest proposal by tomorrow. They got it today. So at least there is, I don't want to say maybe sense of urgency, but at least the timeline is speeding up just a bit.
Yeah. Hopefully that is a good sign.
Yes.
Certainly. So
because you know why, Mike? Because this is a big week for baseball.
See, at least you said it. For our technical director, Luke Robbins, for Steve Bruthume, I'm Mike Farron. Thanks so much for joining us for another edition of the D-backs BP Show. We will be back with you next Tuesday evening, hopefully with even better news. So long.